Okay, now as soon as I finish my sermon, before you do anything, you need to put on goggles because you're playing with fire today. So don't forget that. On your eyes, too, not on your forehead. We're doing what kind of technique today? What's the name of the technique? Calorimetry.
Yes.
The metry part of that means it's a measurement technique, like thermometry, for instance. Calor means heat. And so calorimetry, heat is energy transfer. So calorimetry is a measurement of energy, but it's more specific than that. Calorimetry is the measurement of energy content in a sample. Your sample can be anything you want, really. Notice that this calor root also appears in the word calorie, which is a unit of energy. There's all kinds of units of energy. Calorie is just one of them. But we're going to use the calorie today. You're going to express your energy content of your samples in calories. And it makes sense because the technique we're using to measure the energy is based on changes in the temperature of water. And the calorie as a unit is based on that. If you think back to when we talked about all the special things about water, that chapter, that's when I first gave you the definition of a measurement called the specific heat capacity, which you can measure for any given substance. Do you remember what the specific heat capacity is defined as?
The amount of energy required to raise the temperature for 1 gram of that substance 1 degree centigrade.
That's right. Or 1 Kelvin is the same thing. Yes, how much energy it takes to raise 1 gram of that, the temperature of one, exactly 1 gram of that stuff, whatever it is, by 1 Kelvin or 1 degree Celsius. So any given substance has a value for that. Well, the calorie was invented as a unit to be the amount of heat required to raise the temperature of 1 gram of pure water by exactly 1 Kelvin or 1 degree Celsius. In other words, the specific heat capacity of water is 1 calorie per gram. Now, I need to tell you about something that's one of the stupidest things I've ever heard of in science, which is that the calorie, as I just gave you the definition for as a unit, is defined the way I just defined it. The amount of energy required to raise 1 gram of pure water, 1 degree Celsius. You might have already used this word calorie in your lives before, but that's not what I just told you. For instance, the calories that most people think about or talk about have to do with food. Well, calorie as a unit doesn't have to necessarily have anything to do with food. You can measure the energy content of plenty of things that aren't food. But mostly when we talk about calories, we're talking about calories that are contained in food. And that's not this. And here's the stupid part. Someone thought it was a good idea to invent another unit. Not the calorie, but the calorie. Now, did you hear the difference? Of course not, because they are homophones. They sound exactly alike, but the other one is spelled with a capital C. And they are not equal to each other. Totally ridiculous. A calorie with a lowercase c is what I've already defined for you. And you can think of it as the scientific calorie. Calorie with a capital C is actually 1,000 calories. 1,000 lowercase calories is one uppercase calorie. But when we talk about food calories, that's uppercase C. And notice that since an uppercase calorie is 1,000 lowercase calories, that means one uppercase calorie is 1 kilocalorie. Well, thankfully, modern food labels are shying away from using this capital C calorie anymore. And most modern food labels will say kilocalories instead, which is correct. But I want you to realize that what you've been thinking of as calories is actually a lot more energy than what I just described, because food calories are kilocalories. So I just said that a single calorie, a real lowercase calorie, is the amount of energy necessary to raise the temperature of 1 gram of water 1 degree. Now, volumetrically, how much is a gram of water? 1 milliliter is 1 gram of water. So a cube of water this big by this big by this big, right? Smaller than a typical dye. A food calorie, what you call 1 calorie in food, which is actually 1,000 calories, is therefore enough energy to, you can look at it two ways, at least. It's enough energy to raise the temperature of 1,000 milliliters, 1,000 grams of water, in other words, a whole liter of pure water, by 1 degree centigrade, or equivalently, 1 food calorie, 1 kilocalorie, is enough energy to raise the temperature of 1 gram of water 1,000 degrees. And that's quite a bit of energy, actually, considering that water, compared to most things, has a higher specific heat capacity. It takes a lot of energy to raise the temperature of water. Now, when you think about the fact that most food labels in the United States say that for a typical adult male, the daily intake of food calories, which are kilocalories, is 2,000 food calories or 2,000 kilocalories. Well, that's 2 million calories. So just in the course of living one day, a normal human burns enough energy to raise the temperature of a gram of water by 2 million degrees, or by heating up 2 million grams of water, which is 2,000 liters. That's a lot of water. It takes a lot of heat to even put that up by 1 degree. So it's a lot of energy we're using. Well, anyway, calorimetry is all about measuring the energy content in whatever your sample is. And that doesn't have to be food. On food labels, even something that has energy content will be listed as zero. For instance, cellulose is indigestible. It's full of energy, but not usable to us because we can't digest it, like I talked about in lecture. Well, the stick that you're burning today, you can eat that if you want, but you can't get any energy out of it because it's mostly cellulose. So there's zero nutritional calories, so to speak, but there's certainly energy in there, as you'll find out when you burn it. It'll easily burn and heat up your water. And that's how we're going to assess how we're going to get numbers for energy content. The technique we're using for calorimetry today, which there's various techniques, but we're using a crude technique in which we simply burn samples of our whatever underneath test tubes of water containing a known volume, a known mass of water, and a known starting temperature. And we just then therefore measure how much the temperature rises. Then, based on the definition of a calorie, we can figure out how many calories must have been put into that water. Does that all make sense? Well, it's a crude technique, and it's going to lead to a lot of error. So once you get your numbers, if you were to compare your numbers, which I think it tells you to try to do, to actual food labels, or you can look up food labels online, you should expect your numbers to be way lower than the actual values. And that's because you just lose a hell of a lot of the energy. You know, the only energy that you are recording is energy that actually goes directly into raising the temperature of water. But you're going to be putting your sample over a flame until it lights. Well, it takes it a little bit for it to stay on fire, so you're losing some of the energy right there because it's not under the water yet. Then you have to move it over from the Fisher burner to the tube. All that time it's burning, so you haven't captured any of that energy. And then even when you do get the flame directly under the tube, not even close to 100% of that released energy is going directly into the water, right? Most of it's just going into the air. Plus you can see it, that's part of the energy. If it crackles, you're hearing it, that's part of the energy. So there's all kinds of energy loss that you're not accounting for. That's why you should not be surprised if your calculations are way low compared to the food labels. The food labels are much more accurate because they use a much more accurate method of calorimetry called bomb calorimetry. It's named for the fact that it uses a little chamber made out of thick-walled stainless steel called a bomb because it looks like a little bomb. It doesn't actually explode, meaning the metal does not shatter, but you put your sample in the bomb, whatever it is, a ground-up insect, anything. You close it up. You pump the bomb full of pure oxygen, and it's fitted with electrodes inside. And so when you give it electricity, it'll spark, and since it's pure oxygen environment, and the sample has fuel, it's organic fuel, it causes a combustion reaction. A combustion reaction is the burning of a fuel, reacting it with oxygen. And since you have pure oxygen, there's plenty there, and therefore the reaction will go to completion. In other words, it will burn entirely. Well, when it does, of course, that's going to release a lot of energy to the bomb walls. It's going to heat the bomb up. But the reason this works so well is that the bomb is not out in the air. The bomb is in a chamber completely submerged underwater. Water that has been carefully measured as far as the mass, so you know exactly how many grams of water there are. And you have a very careful measurement of the temperature before you light the bomb. Then when you do cause the reaction, the only place that the energy can go is into the water. So it captures all of it. And therefore you just have to get a very careful final measurement of the water temperature. And then based on the temperature change and the number of grams of water, you can use the definition of calorie to figure out how many calories were released. That's how they do it for food labels. You have a lot of error because most of your energy is going into the air itself. But you're largely doing the same thing. You have to know how much water you're starting with and how much are you starting with. 10 grams, which is 10 milliliters. Right. Well, the volume is 10 mil. If you measure 10 milliliters of volume, you know you have 10 grams if it's pure water. And you also have to have a very careful measurement of the starting temp. That means every time, even though you're starting over with fresh room temperature water each time, don't assume it's the same temperature every time. Measure the beginning temperature every time. And this is another way that you can get even worse errors. When you use your setup, you have to put your test tube of water into this bottom clamp. But you might have to mess with it a little bit because you want to have it clamped in place so that the bulb of the thermometer is completely submerged but not touching any of the glass. So play with it a little bit before you get your before you do any burning, because you need to get a good stable beginning temperature. Okay, so another thing is the main thing that can go wrong is how you burn these things. So you're using the tongs to burn them, but these samples are not going to burn completely like they do in the bomb. You're going to have some stuff left over in each sample. That's no problem, though, as long as you know how much actually did burn. If it did undergo combustion, then that stuff is no longer solid. It turned into carbon dioxide and water vapor, which are in the air now. So anything that you have left over is just unburnt stuff. And as long as you properly subtract that from what you had originally, then you'll know how much you actually burned. Okay, that's the rationale. But these samples also drip stuff as they're burning. And you need to collect all of the stuff that drips so that you can properly subtract that out. Well, when stuff drips onto the foil, which you always need to have under your setup so to catch those drips. Once those drips occur, you can't get all of that stuff off the foil. So that means you need to weigh it with the foil together as one weight. And therefore, you have to do that to begin with as well, so that you subtract not only the leftover sample, but the foil itself. What I mean by that is you need to zero your scale. You need to use a separate piece of foil for each sample because it has to be the same foil beginning and ending. You zero out your scale, and then you get a combined weight of the foil and your sample. That's your initial weight that you write down. Of course, the foil, you don't really want to be part of it, but it's going to be subtracted out. Then you put that same piece of foil, not a different one, under your setup and let it drip, while you're burning it. And then you put all of the leftover sample from your whatever's dripped and whatever's still in the tongs on that same piece of foil, zero the scale again, and then put on this whole thing and get a combined final mass of foil and sample. Then when you do the subtraction of final minus or initial minus final, it will subtract out both the leftover sample and the foil itself. Does that all make sense? Then you'll get as accurate a result as you can for these crude conditions. One other thing, and I think this is pointed out in the manual, is that even though technically you're not changing the water, so you could reuse the water for another second trial, you don't want to do that. And that's because you want to start out with a sufficiently low temperature water. And if you start with one that you just used, it's going to already be warm. The problem with that is something I told you about for a different reason in another lab. If you have temperature versus time graphed while you heat up water, it's going to rise in temperature gradually, right? But only until it hits the boiling point, whatever the boiling point is for the prevailing pressure. Once it hits boiling point, you keep putting heat into it, but it's not changing the temperature at all. It's just boiling at that point, right? So if you got measurements that include this plateau, it would be meaningless. This is the final temperature, this is the initial temperature. It says that it didn't change at all, right? Well, that doesn't mean that you didn't put heat into it. So you don't want anywhere near this plateau. That's why the manual tells you, even if your sample is burning nicely, got to keep your eye on the temperature, because if it gets to 80 degrees, you want to blow that sample out. Keep it from heating the water anymore so that you're getting two temperatures beginning and ending somewhere in the range before it gets to the plateau. All right? Some of them will burn a lot better than others, but you have to keep your eye on the temperature. And by the way, finally, the last thing you want to be careful about is the temperature. The thermometer might still be changing a little bit even though you've stopped burning. So keep your eye on it. As soon as the flame goes out, Keep your eye on the temperature, on the thermometer, until you see it no longer rising. That's your final temperature. All right, any questions about that? And otherwise, it's pretty straightforward and goes fairly quickly, so I'll let you at it.